I welcome to Cows Larry Misade. He is a Kenyan gay rights activist and a recent political asylee of the United States of America. He began his work as a human rights defender in Kenya in 2004 when he joined Ishtar MSM, one of Kenya's first organizations to provide health services to men who have sex with men. He is now in America and beginning to talk, and will be talking in the Bay Area in San Francisco this weekend. I welcome Larry, and my first question is, what is the law in Kenya about homosexuality?
Section 162 to 165 of the Kenyan Penal Code criminalizes same-sex practices, and these carry the prison sentence of up to 14 years. Even though there have been a few convictions based on this, the very existence of these laws have continued to justify denial of fundamental human rights and freedoms, and these create avenues for human rights violations and abuses for LGBT people. LGBT people therefore constantly are denied access to health, held in remand houses without any charges, and routinely harassed by police. And despite the fact that the National AIDS Control Council acknowledges that gay men account for about 15.2% of new HIV infections, there's still no programming targeting gay men in Kenya. And so most people do not therefore have access to health. And sometimes they're denied access to healthcare and their human rights violated against. There's also physical assault, threat, and blackmail. And in some extreme cases, by both state and unstate actors. And it's because of this that I decided to come out and speak for those that did not have the courage to and give a voice to the community.
Well, that's a very brave thing. Now, when you were growing up and you realised you were gay, what did that do to you in that type of atmosphere, which was obviously even more repressed than now even?
Growing up, I knew I was different, but homosexuality is not a subject that people talk about commonly in Africa. And I didn't get to know the word until when I went to high school, and I was actually suspended from school for being a gay person. And I didn't pretty much do anything after that, but going through high school, I was discriminated against, suspended just because of my sexual orientation. And it's after that, when I joined university, that's when I moved to the largest city in Nairobi, I found an LGBT group that had already started doing some community outreach, and I decided to join them in their activities just to share experiences and sort of let the community know of what the LGBT people were going through.
Yeah. Now, was there a difference between, say, how men are treated as to women, gay men, compared to gay women in Kenya?
Well, the penal code does not mention same-sex practices between women. It only mentions same-sex practices between men. But generally, both gay men and women are treated the same. The stigma and discrimination is the same for both.
Yep.
And lesbian women still face challenges like rape and pretty much the same discrimination in general that LGBT people face.
Now, obviously, that seems incredible. You're saying, you know, there's no programs for men for HIV and AIDS after this is after 30 years of an epidemic that has ravaged East Africa. It's pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah, Yes, constantly, I mean, since 2004, even though there has been limited research, but this research has continually showed that the prevalence rate amongst gay men is higher than in the general community. Mm. And since 2005, the National AIDS Control Council has acknowledged that men who have sex with men need to have intervention programs. However, there's still no national programming targeting this group, and the services have wholly been inadequate or non-existent in most parts of the country. There are only a few service providers. Actually, there's only one standalone service provider targeting gay men and women, and the others are basically research-based, and the LGBT groups trying to do outreach programs as well.
And now yourself, you've worked when you were in Kenya. You were studying environmental planning and management at Kenyatta University.
Yes.
Now within that, but then you were volunteering as a health manager for Ishtar MSM. Could you explain what that is?
Ishtar MSM is one of Kenya's oldest organizations. It was formed in 2007 and to reach out to gay men regarding their health and social well-being. So they carry outreach services to ensure services for gay men and other men who have sex with men, and also have been in the forefront of LGBT organizing in East Africa.
Within your role there, you really did a lot of empowering. You went to into the wider LGBT movement. What moved you into that? And and tell us about some of the things, landmark things that you worked on.
One of the things that we had to do, because at around that time, the LGBT movement was pretty much not organized. And it's then that actually the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission and other organizations came through to help us in organizing. So because the challenges that we face are kind of similar, we had to come together to ensure that we had strategies that could help us within the movement. One of the major strides that we had was that, like I said before, gay men are included in the National AIDS Strategic Plan. And it's been a long battle until 2010 where they actually included costing for providing lubricants in the National Strategic Plan. Two, we've also been actively involved within the public health arena in terms of HIV AIDS awareness, prevention and care. And in 2007, which was the first time that LGBT people came out publicly, that's when I came out and sort of gave a face to the LGBT movement in Kenya, because prior to that, for instance, the former president had said that there were no LGBTI people in Kenya. Mm. And so it was sort of to demystify this and let the nation know that LGBT Kenyans were there. And what that did was that we always call it our Stonewall event. Mm. It created a platform where people could discuss about homosexuality, and it led the movement to where it is today.
Now, for you personally, coming out, how did that change your life there? Obviously, I imagine it must have been fairly dramatic.
When I came out, I was disowned by my family, and I equally continued to face threats, including death threats. And I was physically abused and verbal abuse was part of my daily life. In college as well, where everything was fine until when I came out publicly, I was discriminated against and secluded. And it became so worse when I was personally beat up. And the students vowed to go on strike if I did not leave campus. And so things became extremely unbearable when the death threats continued, and that is the reason why I sought asylum in the United States.
Well, yeah, that's quite a dramatic thing to do, obviously, to leave your home country for that. And so when did you decide to do that, and when did you manage to get over here?
I managed to get to the United States in May 2010. And this was because initially, I mean, there had been a series of attacks, and I'd sought refuge in other countries like Uganda, where I'd gone and stayed with my friend through the help of Amnesty International, Eagle Hut again, which has been very, very key in assisting me. And when it reached May, prior to my travel to the United States, my housemate was actually beat up, and I'd had people following me, and when they beat up my housemate, they said that they were going to get me and kill me. So when I got to the United States, my housemate advised me not to go. As an activist, I was only prepared to come and go back, because I traveled to other parts of the world before and gone back home. But this time, according to what my housemate had gone through, I had to look things through and decided to at least stay there for security reasons. And I mean, just a few months afterwards, like in January this year, one of my very close friends, David Cato, was killed in Uganda, which really confirmed the fears that I had.
Yes, indeed. Very scary. So since then, it seems like you're getting a lot of good support here, and that you're working hard. Generally, what type of things have you been doing?
Generally, coming to the United States, it's different, and settling in as an immigrant in this country. And so, one, I'm happy that at least I'm safe, and I have the support of friends around who've been helping me. And I would also like to say that Eagle Hack has really, really been great to me in terms of they helped me not only in seeking asylum, but they've also tried to reach out to organizations around here in Houston that I could work with, even if it's in terms of volunteering. And besides that, I'm a steering committee member of the International Red Bull Microbial Advocates, which I continue to work with daily, and also partner with EcoHack in raising awareness about LGBTI people around the world.
Are you writing a book or anything about your experiences?
I do keep a diary, and I do hope in future I might be able to write a book, but none at the moment.
Have you done much then, going around the country, speaking?
No, this is the event in San Francisco is going to be my first event speaking to share, basically. And this is because Carrie, the executive director of Eagle Hack, contacted me because he knew I'm in the country, and he sort of thought that I would be of great help.
And where will it be, and when?
It will be on Friday, Francisco. I'm not sure of that in the year.
Well, great. Well, Larry, Miss Ade, I really appreciate the interview, and very interesting life story so far, and doing great work. I hope you enjoy the stay in the Bay Area. I think you'll enjoy it.
Oh, thank you so much.